From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. At any given time, one out of every three women in the U.S. has a condition called bacterial vaginosis, also called BV. It's linked to serious long-term health issues, and yet, for many people, doctors don't have a good treatment. But now there is new hope. Mass General Hospital has performed the first vaginal fluid transplants in the country. WBUR's Gabriella Emanuel has been reporting on this, and she joins me now to explain what's going on. Gabriella, thanks so much for coming by.
It's good to be here.
So before we jump into these transplants, let's talk about BV. What is it? What are the symptoms? And why do so many women have it?
So let's start with the basics. We all have bacteria living on and in us, like trillions of bacteria, and they are crucial for our functioning. Think about our gut. We have lots of bacteria there, and they help us break down food. Mm-hmm. Most places in our body, we want a whole lot of different types of bacteria, but not in our vagina. There, you want just one type of bacteria to dominate. And when that doesn't happen, and there are a bunch of different types of bacteria, that is BV. The symptoms typically associated with it are discharge and odor, but those are associated with a whole lot of vaginal conditions. And more than half of women with BV report having no symptoms at all.
Got it. And what causes it?
We really don't know. Some people say they have sex and then they get BV. Other people get their period. Other people say it just happens because it's Tuesday. I mean, the reality is scientists have no idea. But what we do know is that it is problematic, regardless of whether you have symptoms. It's linked to a higher risk of HIV, HPV, preterm birth, maybe even infertility. There are no great treatments, despite it being prevalent and being problematic. So for basically 40 years, doctors have turned to the same answer, which is prescribing antibiotics. Mm-hmm. But 1 month after taking antibiotics for BV, there is a 40 to 60% chance that the BV will have returned. So this really drives people nuts. Here's one woman, Jade Jenga, who has been battling BV for years.
I started to not like my own body because it was fighting me all the time.
And from the medical perspective, it is also very hard. Here is someone else, Caroline Mitchell, talking about this. She directs the Vulvo-Vaginal Disorders Program at Mass General Hospital.
And the fact that there hasn't been a new treatment is infuriating as a healthcare provider and as a woman, and is a huge opportunity for new science to give us something different.
I imagine there's a lot of frustration behind this. So, okay, let's get to this new science. Tell me about these transplants.
So the idea is really simple. You basically take fluid from a healthy vagina and you put it in an unhealthy one. The complex part here is the collection. You need to very carefully screen donors to make sure they don't have any infectious diseases. They can't travel to certain places, like places that have Zika. They can't have sex in case, you know, a stray sperm, you know, sneaks into the donation. And each donation is also very small. So they have to do a donation day after day after day. But when you get to the actual transplant, that part's easy. It's basically an eyedropper used to deliver the fluid, and then the recipient lies there for 15 minutes, and that's it.
What exactly is in this fluid?
Yes, that is the question. So we don't know for certain, but the vast majority of it is something that people in the field call the superhero of the vagina.
Dun, da, da,
exactly, right? Its real scientific name is Lactobacillus crispidus. And nobody totally understands its special power, but Mitchell thinks it comes from making the vagina relatively acidic and also keeping inflammation low. So when you look at certain viruses like HIV, the acidic environment actually makes the virus move more slowly. And when there's less inflammation, the virus has fewer places to target, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. So why can't scientists just, you know, take this superhero bacteria and put it in a lab and skip all this hassle of a transplant and just grow it?
Yeah, right? That is the, you know, million-dollar question. So there is actually a group at the University of California, San Francisco, trying to do just that. And they have had good success with their trials so far. But Mitchell will tell you that we don't totally know how this superhero works. And one of the things we don't know is whether it needs a sidekick or two to do its magic. So the value of taking the whole fluid, which includes the entire microbiome, is that it might have things in there that are necessary, even though we don't realize that they're necessary. We don't know what their value is. So I spoke to this group at UCSF about this kind of transplant approach where you take everything. And they said it's fascinating, but they're not sure it's that practical because it can be really hard to figure out the exact dose, what's in that transplant, and also the logistics are hard. But I should say, even Mitchell agrees, transplants likely aren't the like long-term, large-scale answer here. It's more about figuring out those sidekicks and then how to calculate them in the lab. And any new treatments or medications are still at least a few years away from being available to the general public.
Okay, so how did we get this far without a better understanding of this stuff? I mean, even a basic handle on the situation.
I know, right? I put that question to Mitchell, and she said the answer is twofold. Number one, human vaginas are unique. No other animal in the entire animal kingdom has a vagina that is dominated by lactobacillus. Not mice, not baboons, not chimpanzees, nobody. And that makes, yeah, that makes progress in the field really difficult because you can't try things out on an animal model. You have to go straight to humans. And this second thing that Mitchell pointed to is the long-term lack of investment in women's health, and then particularly in women's sexual well-being. Mm-hmm. She says when you juxtapose conditions that primarily affect men with those that primarily affect women, the ones that affect men get significantly more research funding.
Of course.
In an era like when we're sequencing people's tumors so we can give individual chemotherapy to people, we still don't know why people get vaginal infections. It is incredibly frustrating.
The field has a long way to go, but she's hopeful that vaginal fluid transplants will be one step in the right direction.
Yes, a much needed step for sure. Gabriella, thank you for talking to us about this. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. But I want to talk a little more about the lack of investment part. Can you stick around for a minute?
Sure.
So, you know, there's so much we don't know about women's sexual and reproductive health, right? Like, as a man, you know, the older I get, the more I realize I need to learn and unlearn in some cases, right? You just gave us this science behind the procedure, but I want to zoom out. Can you talk about how significant of a breakthrough this is for women's health?
Yeah, so it is a breakthrough in that it took years and years to get off the ground. Mm-hmm. I actually remember reporting on this almost starting before the pandemic, and then it was delayed. And before that, other places, one in Johns Hopkins, didn't get it off the ground. So it's significant. The real breakthrough, though, will be depending on what they find. So when the trial wraps up. So we'll have to wait for that for a few years. But then it could be significant. There could be real implications here in terms of preventing HIV, for example. Mm. Preterm birth, 1 in 10 births are early, huge expense to the medical system and, you know, kids' lives. And we know almost nothing about how to prevent it. So this could be very helpful there, too. So I think this could be a breakthrough that then spawns other breakthroughs.
Understood. Okay, so this condition, you know, I imagine that it might be causing some stress or strain on some relationships. What are some of the ways that people can work through that?
That is a great point. Actually, people who have BV say that it's not a pleasant condition, but one of the hardest things is that it strikes at the core of their relationships, at their intimacy. It is unpleasant for them, but it's also unpleasant for both people in the partnership. Mm-hmm. So I think the key is that it is most definitely not the woman's fault. Right. And then also something that they can work on together and acknowledge and kind of approach as a team. When talking with Caroline Mitchell, many of her patients would come there saying they don't feel like a woman anymore. It's just kind of destroyed their relationships. So I do think that that is a key piece of the puzzle here, making sure that they don't feel alone or responsible for this condition.
Right. Support and affirm them through this process just to make sure that it doesn't take anything from them, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, how can people better educate themselves?
Yeah, this condition in particular is a really challenging one because a lot of symptoms, vaginal symptoms, are very nonspecific. It's really impossible for a person to diagnose themselves. That said, if you go into your doctor's office, it's really easy for them to diagnose you. So the key here is going to your appointments with your gynecologist and talking to them about these issues. And maybe even if you don't have symptoms, because that is so common with BV, still asking to get tested for it.
Well, Gabriella, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm sure, you know, some folks out there will find it very helpful.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's WBUR's health and science reporter, Gabriella Emanuel. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Wilder Fleming with sound design from Matt Reed. It was edited by Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, so a lot of people listen to Consider This at the end of the day, and NPR's up first in the morning. But a lot of the actual news happens in the middle of the day. And the team bringing the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR show Here and Now. And yes, there is a podcast version. So want more of the best news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast, wherever you listen. Just search Here and Now.